This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode 593. We are the Fight Disciples. This one's dedicated to the world of boxing. Might be a bit of football coming up in a minute. Yeah. If it's the first time you ever come across us, you can, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. We're on YouTube as well. Fight Disciples on there. And we're across our website if you need an Android feed. FightDisciples.com. We're all over social media. Get amongst it. Come and be part of the crew. Lots coming up on the show today, including a full review of everything that happened at the weekend. And we'll look ahead to Gervonta Davis being back in action this weekend coming. How are you, mate? You good?
I'm good, mate, yeah. It's been a brilliant season. I know where you want to go, so let's go there. Two cups in the bag. That close. You know, what were we, 45 minutes maybe? There's a few minutes there where I'm sure there was some sweaty palms over at City's ground. Nah. I think Mane scored. Mane scored at Anfield when City was still behind, yeah. And the goal got called for offside. That was that the moment from the ball hitting the back of the net to that offside flag going up. That was when I actually thought, "Oh my shit and God, this is happening. This is fucking happening." And then the flag went up, and I was like, "Ah, not today, brother." The reality sunk in, but yeah, man, it's a fucking brilliant season and a great weekend.
Ilkay Gundogan, where do you want your statue, my boy? Give me a shout. Scored?
I've got no idea who scored for City. All I know is they won, obviously. It was a 6 minutes of madness, wasn't it?
That's it, son.
6 minutes of madness. Hey. I bet you the City fans, all 12 of them, were shitting themselves at half-time. 2-0 down. Fucking hell. Songs would have been written forevermore. How Stevie G won the title at City Ground.
Slipped up again, didn't he? Never mind, Stevie, lad. Never mind. Yeah. Great day. As you said, it was my birthday. I was out and about enjoying myself, watching that. Seeing Burnley get relegated as well. Oh, it's just a top day, man. Top day. And I just, you know, something, once that final whistle came in, the final whistle comes in, I thought, yeah, I'm going to get amongst it. So I know what you're like in these moments. And I can't let this moment pass me by because I know that next week, after the Champions League final, you're going to be a nightmare. I know you are. I know what's coming this weekend. So I thought to myself, I'm going to get me digs in nice and early. Let's get me shots in now, right, so I can have a week of it. Because next week in the summer is going to be an absolute nightmare. So I went in there and I made some type of comment about, obviously, to win knockout cup competitions. Before that, I said to win knockout cup competitions, you need a little bit of good fortune.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You might. It's the way that maybe you're drawn out of the hat or maybe the way that another team takes a certain cup competition seriously or not, you know. Those types of things. I just thought I'd chuck it out there. The only truth in football is the league table. Let's be straight.
It's a bollocks. It's a bollocks.
The only truth in football is the league table.
What was the handball against Everton? Remember when the City player caught the ball and fucking spun it on his finger? Yeah, and the referee didn't give handball?
Yeah, but over game, over 38 games, it all levels itself out, Nicholas. All levels itself out. You finish where you're supposed to finish. The best in the land finish first.
Eighth in the championship. You finish where you're supposed to finish.
Anyway, this is not where I'm going with this. This is not the point of what I'm saying. So I've chucked that out there.
Anyway. Just wait. I hope you're going where this conversation
needs
to go.
You know what I'm going
with. Monsieur Dognons.
So, I chucked that out there. All I wanted was for Nick, right, to respond. And I'm sat there in the booze and I'm having a few bevvies. And I'm seeing them coming. I'm seeing these tweets coming. Scousers are going wild at me. And I'm finding it highly amusing. He doesn't bite. Yeah. So I jumps on him again. I sends him one direct then, don't I? Because you did it to me last week. Where is he? Where's Adam Catterall? Right, where's Nick Pete? Where's he at? So I pings it in there. I'm getting the ailing, mate. Do you want a drink or anything like that? Then me and you start interacting and I'm posting pictures of obviously City celebrations. Right. Then some geezer called Jonah gets onto me, right? Now Jonah's...
These tweets are the best tweets.
Mate. Jonah was relentless yesterday. Jonah, if you're listening, morning to you, son. Hopefully you've calmed down. Probably not listening to the show right now. You're probably at school, aren't you? Just got out your E-Man pyjamas or whatever you've just got out of. But check this out. This is Jonah's response to me saying that the best team in the land finished first. That is one hideous-looking cunt. You look like a sex offender. That accent you speak of is well disgusting. Dana White pulled you up on it too. Fantastic. The face of a... Wait. The face of a dog nonce. Right. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Jonah. Right? A dog nonce is probably the greatest put down that I've ever heard of in my life. It's an amazing put down. But listen, calm down for a second. I need to explain something here from Jonah's point of view, right? He said dog nonce, right? Now he's insinuating there that shagging older dogs is all right. What are you doing, Jonah? No. Any type of bestiality is wrong, my friend.
Wrong.
All right?
That's right.
But not according to Jonah. Puppies? Oof, that's where I draw the line, mate. That's where I draw the line.
That's right, it was young dog nonce, wasn't
it? That's it. The face...
Young dog nonce.
Of a dog nonce. Right, okay. But then Jonah doesn't stop there, right? Because what I do then, I'm sat in the pub pissed, laughing my head off because I'm thinking, Jonah, mate, your head's falling off here, lad. What are you doing? So I put it on my social media, saying we've caught a big one, kids, and people are at him, people are giving him loads of stuff. But Jonah then, he keeps biting. Jonah, leave it, mate. Leave it. Once I put it out there publicly, leave it. But no, not for Jonah, right? No, it's me that's caught the big one. I knew you'd bite about the Dana White stuff. Get to Turkey and get that barnet sorted. Why do you make out you support City when you're a Blackburn Rovers fan? Proper nonce behaviour, right? All right? So he's still coming. I'm still laughing my bollocks off.
The best thing is, Jonah must listen because you were talking about getting your hair done in Turkey the other week.
Exactly.
So he's obviously a fight disciple. Jonah,
I'm loving it.
Fucking unreal. Unreal.
Now bear in mind, Jonah's not stopped yet. No. Giving it the big one on here. Come to Liverpool and I'll try and trigger a few Liverpool fans, lad. You baldy cunt. Wait, no, he ain't stopped. Jonah's still going. Jonah's still going. You're a Blackburn Rovers fan. I get it if you supported City, but you don't. You must have a dislike to Liverpool fans. No, your best mate's a bloody Liverpool fan. He's sat here, lad. So come to Liverpool and get it out of your system, Billy Big Bollocks. Right, there you go. Bear in mind, Jonah has been on this Twitter feed since April of 2021. His profile picture is Sadio Mane. And he's got 43 followers, and all of his retweets are just of you getting followed, son. And all of his retweets are just of Big John Fury. That's it. That's all his retweets. There you go.
Sounds like, you know who it is? It's fucking Darren Till in disguise, that.
I reckon it is, mate.
That's got to be Till in disguise, because he's the only super John Fury fan I know. But
that's it.
Mate, that's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Maybe we should restart the show there. I'll restart the show now for anyone that wants to get across that.
Go on.
Funny craziness. So, welcome to the Fight Disciples with me, your host, Nick Pete, aka The Talent, and this guy, Keith Lard, Dog Nonce.
It's like that, isn't it? It's like that. I'm getting a word. Dog Nonce.
Mate. That was the name of the dog nonce, wasn't it? Keith Lard in Phoenix Nights.
Yes. Woof. Yeah.
He's drawing a dog. Look, he's drawing a dog. Fucking brilliant.
Oh, putting nonce Amazing. And dog together is tremendous.
Fucking hell.
It's a great put down. I've got to give it him. It's outstanding. The red, you can just see him seething in his mum's box room. He's seething. Like, we've fucking blown the league. This fucking baldy cunt's fucking giving it me, man. The dog nonce.
Oh, man. If I don't use that in my private life with my friends this week, I'll be disappointed. Because that is the next level put down, isn't it? Dog nonce.
We're at a wedding next week, obviously, for our producer, Mike. 100% it's coming out at some point, isn't it? So fucking hell, you dog nonce.
Oh, man. Fucking brilliant.
great.
Superb.
I know that my social media is now going to be littered with people just calling me dog nonce. Amazing. Jonah, incredible. Well done, lad.
Listen, you played the blinder.
Don't bite so hard, lad. It's just a crack, yeah. Innit? It's just a crack.
It's just sports. Don't worry.
I put the rod out there and you're fucking chomping at the bit. Chill, lad. Anyway, there were a bit of boxing going on at the weekend. There were a little bit of action. Where have we got here now? I've got all sorts written down. We had stuff going on in Spain on Friday, which was great stuff. We had a little bit of action from BT Sport as well on Friday evening. And then, of course, we had Bwatsi Richards. We'll start with Bwatsi Richards, right? Because that's probably the biggest over the weekend, just gone.
Yeah.
My conclusions of watching Bwatsi versus Craig Richards are that lots of heart, lots of determination, and a few questions answered, a few. I still have a lot of questions. I'm going to be dead honest, mate. I had loads of questions going in. I wanted somebody to come out of this fight and for me to sit here and go, woo, right,
he's the
British
guy.
British light heavyweights, I know who the man is now. I know who the guy is. I know who the guy that we're all looking at that is going to take these British light heavyweights off into the sunset. I still have that question. I don't know the answer still. Because there's moments in it where I'm thinking, that's really good, that's nice. I can see a little bit of something coming on there. And then I think, oof, if you were against this guy would take advantage of that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at. And I'm obviously referring to Bwatsi. I think I got what I expected from Craig Richards.
Yeah.
The questions I still have over Joshua Bwatsi, sadly, from this fight. Don't get me wrong, good performance, good win, loads of praise for it, but I still have questions over the top level.
Yeah, I think this, the big questions, obviously, is who's the best 175er in the UK, and we still don't know, because it wasn't that kind of performance where you go, wow, okay. Okay, Anthony Yard had a big win over Lyndon Arthur, but it was a rematch. He lost the first fight, so there's question marks still there. You've got Callum Smith, who could do no wrong until he, you know, got caught in the headlights against Canelo down at super middleweight. He's up at light heavyweight now. Where's he? Who's he going to fight next, you know? Callum Johnson, of course, was incredible against Batavia back in 1987. We've hardly seen him since. How good is Callum Johnson these days? I don't even know how old Callum Johnson is, but, you know, Callum Johnson must be fucking ticking on now. I'm guessing he's the oldest statesman in all this. So, you know, and then you've got the likes of Dan Aziz and stuff like that. I think the good thing coming out of it now is clear direction. I think Craig Richards versus Lyndon Arthur makes itself, for me, absolutely makes itself. If you want to throw Dan Aziz in there instead, sound. I think you've got a little trio there that match up well to fight, to go again, to come again. But I think you've got Anthony Yard, Josh Bwatsi, Callum Smith and Callum Johnson still vying for that top spot. All four of them, if you ask them, will probably say the same thing. I'm fighting the winner of Joe Smith Jr. versus... And it's just not going to happen.
No.
Because Dmitry Bivol is the golden ticket in this weight division now after his win over Canelo. Mm-hmm. Whoever wins out of Joe Smith Jr. versus Batavia is going to fight Bivol. That's a fact.
Yeah.
So they need to just fucking move on. This happened a lot at super middleweight when Canelo was beat Kingmaker down there. You can't wait for the world title belt. Get these fights on now. Let's find out who's best of British now. Make a fortune. Any four of those against one another sells, is a big selling fight domestically. And 100% a clear winner goes on for when the world titles fragment, the opportunity's there.
I think all of them need it as well. If I'm really... From a learning point of view, from a kick-on point of view, from a thing that will add to their armour to take on someone like Bivol or take on someone like Batavia. Yeah, I know Callum Johnson's been in with Batavia and he came up short. And I know that Callum Smith has been world champion at a level below and he's been in with Canelo and come up short. I know all that he's been in the big... Those two have probably been in the bigger fights. Yard, Kovalev. I get it. But what I'm saying is now, I'm personally not against Bwatsi taking on Bivol next. I'm not against it. And the reason why is because I think Canelo's going to fight Triple G in September, isn't he? Bivol can't just stand on the shelf. He can't just wait around. We know that Batavia and Joe Smith Jr. is going to do their thing. So what does Bivol do? And if he's got a partnership with Eddie, he's going to earn a few quid, isn't he? He's going to want some fight. And Eddie's going to try and propel his guy, which is Joshua Bwatsi, into the limelight. So I'm not against making the fight. I just don't think Bwatsi wins. And I'm not against that either. I'm not against that either. But what I will say is, I think Bwatsi will be more equipped to win because I think he's got the raw skills. I think he'd be more equipped to beat Bivol if he's come through Callum Smith, if he's come through Callum Johnson. I think that you learn more there to then equip you for a Bivol,
yeah,
maybe in 12 months. If yeah. they made the fight, I wouldn't be against it, mate, but I don't think no. he wins. That's where I'm at.
No. I think you've also got Callum Smith, who'd be pushing Eddie for that fight with Bivol as well. He'd want that yeah. opportunity before Buatsi. And, you know, I think the way Buatsi's career has played out, it has been quite slow. It has been safety first all the way. This was the first time for me he was in with a real fight. And Craig Richards took it to him, just like I thought I would. I thought the cream ultimately rose to the top. Buatsi, what I seen in this fight was exactly what I kind of expected. I was kind of dreaming that maybe Buatsi would be able to rubber stamp it down the stretch. Mm. But Craig Richards got a hell of a chin. And what he proved is something I've already seen before, and is something that Virgil Hunter is yet to be able to tidy up. And that's that, as good as Buatsi is, he's easy to hit.
Yeah.
He keeps his head on that straight line. He doesn't yeah. move his head enough. He's so easy to hit. You think someone that who's a big puncher, you know, Callum Spider's Johnson. Not the biggest puncher in there, but Callum Johnson can fucking whack. And Callum Smith has got deceptive power. Deceptive power. Them big long levers. And right now, I put Callum Johnson and Callum Smith as favourite to beat Buatsi. But Buatsi, so Buatsi for me still has to answer those questions. Had he gone in here with Craig Richards, absolutely went to war with him and then finished him around 7, 8, 9, which is kind of like what I was like, you know what, I'm hoping he does that because I want Buatsi to live up to all his potential. Mm. Had he done that, I'd be on the podcast today going, he's the fucking guy, man. Make the Bivol fight now. Let's see it. Mm. But right now, I think you're right. I think Bivol, way too easy for Bivol to hit. I think Bivol runs away with it. And right now, I think Callum Smith and Callum Johnson probably beat him as well. So there's no going. The good thing is with Buatsi now is there's no going backwards now. You can't take a step backwards after Craig Richards. Craig Richards been there, fought for a world title. Probably everyone would class top five in the UK, but no higher. You've beat him. Now you've got to beat someone above him. Now you've got to beat a Yard, a Smith, or a Callum Johnson if you do not fight Bivol. You can't go back to fighting guys that are, you know, the very forward to this world and all that. Nah, man. Keep pushing forward now. Let's see. The more questions he gets asked, the better he's going to be. He got asked questions at the weekend and he came through it.
Yeah.
Undefeated record intact.
Yeah.
You can't turn your nose up at that. Craig Richards is a live opponent. He fancied it, Craig Richards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, he fancied it. And Buatsi's come through a real test there. Now it's time to keep moving forward.
Mm. We're probably going to talk judging at some point. We're definitely going to talk about it on our MMA show. I'm actually sweet with the scorecards here, mate. Absolutely sweet. I personally scored it 7-5 Buatsi. I can see 8-4 Buatsi. And that's what we got across the board. So from my point of view, I've got to take me out off and say, listen, guys, the three wise people who were ringside, I thought you got it bang on. I don't know how you thought, mate.
I thought they were all fine, yeah. I thought, you know, probably had it a little bit wider, but I'm not complaining about two rounds. I think 115, 113 were on two of the cards, 116, 112 on the other cards. No issue with that whatsoever. Yeah.
Now, listen, I'm
reflected
not...
a really good fight. It wasn't a fight of the year contender. No. It was a cracker. If you haven't watched it yet, 100%, fire up your DAZN. It's 100% worth watching. 12 really good, entertaining rounds.
Yeah. I can't comment on commentary because, as you know, I don't watch fights with sound on. I just watch the fights, so therefore I can't comment. I've seen the social media reaction to the commentary and the narratives maybe that were being said in commentary. I did see Bellew's card flash up on my screen though, mate. Jeez. I thought it was a little bit Buatsi favourable. I'm going to be honest, Tom. I know that you had a little bit of a back and forth with him on social media last week, didn't you, about scoring criteria and whether yeah. we or should or should not be scoring defense techniques. Listen, we'll have a chat with Tom anytime whatsoever.
Of course.
I just had to flag it because it came up on
on my social media feed. Conversations are great. These are the conversations we should be having publicly. How do we feel fights should be scored?
Yeah.
And that's how we get all these conversations out in the open. Like, we're now converts to the mixed martial arts unified rules. And in the unified rules of mixed martial arts, defense is not a scoring mechanism because defense is your prerequisite to staying in the fight. Don't defend yourself. You ain't fucking going to last. And I think boxing should take an element of that. Defense is at the moment, in a lot of people's eyes, as valuable as offense. And that's ridiculous. Because you can't win a fight slipping and parrying shots. You've got to actually throw a punch back. Yeah. And if you slip and parry shots and you're very good at it, when you do throw a shot back and you land clean, that's how you score points. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
that was the conversation I was trying to have with Tony. He was talking about the rumble in the jungle, of course. And I said, yeah, but the dope rope stuff was amazing. But the dope rope, he never won those rounds. He let George Foreman punch himself out. And then his offense won him the fight, ultimately. But a lot of those rounds where Ali's up against the ropes.
He's losing them.
He's losing it when he's against the ropes. I think in a lot of those rounds, if you go back and I watched Rumble in the Jungle at the start of this year for whatever reason. I think the kids were at school and I was just fucking, you know, tossing about. So I stuck it on, pretend I was over in the living room and watched Rumble in the Jungle instead. But in a lot of those rounds, Ali is rope-a-doping. Yeah, he'll throw two or three punches clean off the ropes and then rope-a-dope again. So even in that, even some of those rope-a-dope rounds, he does actually win them, but not because he's just rope-a-doping, but because once Foreman starts getting tired, he goes, brrr, and lands clean shots and then covers up again. So anyway, that's the big conversation. It's a fantastic conversation. We should welcome that conversation, especially with people like Bellew, who have, as I tried to instigate in a Twitter exchange, influence with people like the WBC, influence with people like Eddie Hearn. Very powerful peoples in the sport of boxing. And if you can get people like Bellew talking about it and Eddie talking about it and forcing the WBC to talk about it, then maybe, just maybe, maybe one bloody day, everybody in this sport can go, you know what, for the good of this sport, to make sure we get more casual fans because they bring the money, let's all adhere to exactly the same scoring system, boys. Let's all sign off on it. Let's have a big meeting in Vegas. Eddie's going to get the steak dinners in. And we'll all sit down and go, let's score it like this, let's score it like that, and make a blueprint for every judge on the planet to score with. And then we can eliminate, we won't get rid of bad scores, but over time you can get rid of shit judges and go, hey, your scorecard's rubbish. This is the criteria. What are you doing? Well, you know, I had a glass of water and it was going like, no. You don't do that shit no more. This is the fucking blueprint. You haven't adhered to the blueprint. You're on a suspension. You won't be judging again. That's how we do it, ladies and gentlemen. It ain't difficult. It ain't hard. If you want it to work, we can make it work. So, yeah, I'm going to keep them conversations going.
Well,
How did you score? Robbie Davis Jr. Javier Molina.
I scored it 6-4 in favour of Molina, but I can see 5-5. I can't see. And listen, in the immediate aftermath, I'm watching it, and I could see Robbie's body language, and Robbie's like... That's fucking.
At the end,
I don't know if I feel like I deserve to have done that. Yeah, you know, he's ended up getting himself a split decision.
Yeah.
Where a couple of judges have thought that it was 6-4 Robbie Davis Jr. I cannot see Robbie Davis Jr. winning six rounds of that fight. I just can't see it. Five if I squint. I'm being kind saying five. He wins round three, he wins round six, and for me, he wins round 9 and 10. That's what he wins in that fight. The Molina, I thought, consistently had the cleaner, effective work. Yes, he's going backwards. I know he's going backwards. He went backwards the whole fight. Mm-hmm. Don't matter. If the other dude is just walking forwards and then landing on arms and not really landing those clean, effective shots, and the other dude then rocks your head back, even if it's just one, two, three times in a round, he's doing the clean, effective work. I thought that it was harsh that Molina walks away from that fight at the weekend.
As a loser.
As a loser, mate. As a loser. I can understand, like I said, as I squint, if you'd have gone, it's a draw. Okay, all right. But the kid didn't lose the fight, in my opinion.
Yeah, I watched it. It was me niece's 21st birthday, so I was out Saturday doing karaoke and shit like that all afternoon. So when the time... I got home handy in time to watch the fights. But I promised myself, I said, you know what, I'm not going to tweet about the fights tonight because I've got a belly full of beer. I'll wait until tomorrow. And that's exactly what I did.
Clever.
Yeah, man. That's what I mean. But I was watching it, and I remember watching it drunk, thinking, the memorable moments were all Molina snapping his head back, all Robbie Davis Jr. getting saved by the bell at the end of the eighth, almost touching down in like 2 or 3 or whatever. So when I was on the Saturday night, when I had blurred vision, I'm like, fucking hell, we've got a bad one there. That's a bad decision. But I watched it back on Sunday, and I tweeted about this as well. Watched it back Sunday and scored it properly. And I scored it 5-5. However, what I will concede is the rounds that Molina won were clear Molina rounds. The rounds that Robbie Davis won are when Robbie's front foot pressure And he was landing shots, and Molina wasn't landing as clean a work as he was in other rounds. Mm-hmm. Especially in that round eight. For me, Robbie Davis saved by the bell in round eight. Shane looks like he's about to throw the towel in. Robbie's in a bad way. But Robbie Davis comes again in the ninth, and for some reason, known only to Molina, he fucking has a stinker of a round. He's up against the ropes, just covering up, letting Robbie Davis just unload on him. I'm thinking to Molina, mate, you threw this fight away now. It's close again now. He was out. All you had to do was put you go forward for the first time at the start of the ninth, and Robbie Davis probably goes. He probably finishes the fight there, and then Molina. I think he'll be kicking himself when he watches the tape back. I personally don't like to agree with you, but he did. Molina did not deserve to lose the fight. For me, a draw would have been absolutely bob on. But what I will say is, both these guys are extremely well matched. This was this card, the matchmaking on this card, you know, Buatsi Richards, Davis Molina, even the Babich barroom brawl thing. Good matching, man. Scott Ney versus Roman. These are real high-level matchmaking. Congratulations, everyone at Matchroom, who put this together, because this card was fucking bob on in terms of level against level. And that's what it was. Robbie Davis Jr. and Molina, they're at this level. And if they fought again, I'd be 100% up for it, man. I think Molina deserves it too.
Yeah. You just mentioned the barroom brawl there, man. We've spoken about Babich in the past on the show. And it's not sexy. It's not sweet science. It's not watching Floyd Mayweather, is it? But I tell you something, it's fucking super entertaining. You sit there and you get your bang for your buck, don't you? Because this dude just wants to have a scrap, an absolute Weatherspoons throw down. It was captivating from start to finish. He only throws hooks. I don't think he throws anything else, does he? Don't throw any other type of shots.
He hasn't got a jab. He hasn't got an uppercut. He hasn't got a straight right hand. All he's got is hooks.
Honestly, it's great. It's just great to watch, man. He's just boom, 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 just constant. Fair play, he's got a fucking tank on him and all, hasn't he? Just keep fucking going.
Yeah, he's got an engine, yeah.
Ham, 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 boom, 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 ham, ham. That's all he does. It's great, mate. I'm in. Bring it. Listen, Oscar Rivas will batter him, but bring it on anyway, mate. Bring it on.
No, I don't recognise that bollocks, so it is what it is. Both of them are just cruiserweights. Just fight a cruiserweight, man. Stop trying to circumnavigate the sport for some bullshit. Did you see that tweet straight away when they announced it? I was like, I got one of them in my cornflakes box regarding the belt. Get to fucking France. I tell you what, the highlight for me from the card, they were entertaining fights, but I thought Chantel Caverns, fucking mustard. Brilliant. Absolutely won every round, pissed every round. Quality. Is she Jamie Moore's? She's with Jamie Moore, isn't she?
Yeah, Chantel is, yeah.
Yeah. Jamie Moore's got her looking absolutely unreal. She should be screaming for a fight with Katie Taylor, trying to get Katie Taylor to move up. That's what she should be screaming for. But the other highlight for me was the other girl on there, that Ellie Scottney. Mate, she is the shit. Honestly, that Maria Roman's a tough cookie, man. And to be able to do what she did, basically box her head off in your fifth pro fight, Ellie Scottney's going to become a world champion. She's a... Again, put her in with Ebony Bridges and you'll find out what levels is. That's all I'm going to say. And that's and no disrespect to Ebony Bridges, the girl has made a sensational career for herself. She's got herself a world title belt, for what it's worth. Fantastic. I'm a fan of Ebony Bridges. She's never in a dull fight. But the sport's about levels, and Ellie Scottney is about 17 levels above.
Yeah, man. Yeah, she was great. Friday night. No stacking. No stacking.
Brilliant. Yes.
Do you know what? The best bit about it, right? Yeah, of course, Beefy highlights the fact that you're not allowed to wrap gloves in that way. But it's the way that a Scouser is communicating with a Spaniard, right? It's like when we're... Do you know when you go on holiday and you're ordering a beer and you talk slower and louder is basically what you do. You don't speak the native tongue. Okay, I'm going to speak my tongue slower and louder so you understand it. No. Stacking. Illegal. Illegal. Can't do that. And I'm like, Beef, why are you talking like that? It is amazing.
Sensational though, wasn't it? Absolutely sensational stuff. And, you know, JJ Metcalf, man, that you want someone like Beefy in your corner. You want someone like Beefy that will go into a fucking room. As Paul Smith tweeted afterwards, we always send Beefy in. No matter who's fighting, Liam always goes in to watch the hands get wrapped because he'd start an argument in an empty room. He just fucking loves it. And you could see that about him. But good on him. No, he was right. He's like, no, no. And then he said afterwards on the broadcast, he was like, I went in there and he'd already started wrapping hands. And I was like, I've only just arrived. I want to see. And then he was like, wait a minute. There's no officials here. There's no one from the Spanish authorities. There's nobody here from the WBA. I think it was a WBA whatever belt. There's no representatives here. You can't start wrapping hands yet. And then next thing you know, he starts stacking. So if you haven't seen the clip, he's putting bandages on, then tape, then more bandage on top. And as Beefy rightfully pointed out, you can use as much bandage on your hands as you like. But as soon as you start applying tape, you are not allowed to apply any more bandage because think about how layers work, you know? Get yourself a roll of toilet roll and roll it on top of itself to form like a bed. Then put a piece of paper in between it and put more toilet roll on top. It's going to be way stronger than just the toilet roll because the way fucking physics works, basically soft and hard, soft and hard. So Beefy was absolutely right. They were effectively loaded gloves. And to call that out, and the guy knew because the guy started fucking cutting them off. And then the commissioner comes in and Beefy explains and the guy's like, well, man, it's fine. I tell you what, if I was any previous Cayman LaRangian opponent, I'd be like, wait a fucking minute. Wait a minute. No wonder he hits like a fucking super middleweight. I'd be asking serious questions, but yeah, unreal from Beefy. Then the relayed on the broadcast that prior to that happening, Joe McNally had a fucking tape measure in the ring because they tried to make the ring smaller than what was contractedly obliged and they had to make the ring bigger. So again, kudos to Joe Mac. Like, you can't pull the wool over the eyes of Scousers, man. You're fucking, the Spanish got caught out big style there.
Especially them two. They're as Scousers they come. Beefy and Joe Mac, yeah? Do you imagine them rocking up in Bilbao, tracking up to the max? Right, lads, are we having it? No. Change that. Change this. Change that. That's not what we said. And you're like, well, fucking, I can't do anything with these fuckers about.
Yeah.
Amazing, mate. Amazing.
But then you got to JJ. Top it all off. Yeah. JJ gets in there and absolutely does the business. Fights to the game plan. Doesn't bite. We've all seen JJ in his entire career with the Cheeseman fight and he's always in entertaining fights.
Mm.
He always fucking puts his chin out there. He's a chip off the old block, just like his dad. He's a warrior through and through. But what we got here was a game plan for LaRangia. Slip his jab. If you slip his jab, you can go to work. Mm-hmm. And all night, he slipped that jab and went to work. And Cayman LaRangia had no answer for it. Once he couldn't land his jab, he was fucked. And they did that in the game planning. For weeks in the gym, before they even landed in Bilbao, they were working on it the whole time. You could see James Metcalf goes and produces the performance of his career. Magnificent stuff.
Yeah, it was, man. It felt like, listen, Lehoraga had success, but it was ones, whereas it was threes and fours for JJ. He was fantastic. Brilliant away from home performance. Superb from him. Congratulations to the whole team. I tell you what, Joe Mack, we've said it on a couple of occasions on this show, man. Joe Mack's low-key fucking bubbling along, isn't he? Doesn't have a phone, doesn't have any social media, just making fighters in his fucking gym and turning up and tearing the gaff up. Fair play, mate. Fair play, Joe. Listen, this is feeling like Scouse FM because it's Andrew Kane celebration again, mate. That's what it is. What the fuck is going on in Liverpool right now with all these fighters? Andrew Kane, I flicked over on Friday night because obviously we're high on Andrew Kane. And we're high on everybody coming out of Everton Red Triangle right now because that's another gym which is just absolutely booming and banging right now. So you flick over, you watch Andrew Kane, and it's fucking over. It's over. So I'm rewinding it going, did I miss it? Yeah, I missed it. Right, okay. Unbelievable. And this is a dude, he's stopping guys that don't get stopped in first rounds. Good quality guy. Okay, we're not talking world level. We're not talking about killers. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about, a guy that's only, what, in his 10th professional fight, undefeated, smoking every man and his dog, dudes that have been there, done it, and have been competing against guys that have gone on to the top, top level. This is going to be hard to match him, mate. It's going to be so hard to match Andrew Kane.
Yeah. Well, Uncle Frank's going to have to put his hand in his pocket, isn't he, to keep this kid moving forward. But he's not the only one. You know, you've got, as you say, you've got Nick Ball, his teammate, who is ferocious and had his breakthrough moments
on the weekend, just to put it into perspective. Last year, Dennis McCann, again, we're all high on Dennis, went the distance, went 8 rounds with the kid that Andrew Kane knocked out at the weekend in 1 round.
In 2 minutes, yeah. Two minutes, 2 seconds. Absolutely smashed them to bits. Someone came at me on social media and was like, come on then, Nick, how far can he go? And I was like, mate, this kid can go the full... I would never... One, with this much power, you can't put a limitation on where he goes. Two, you know who he's in the gym with every day. Fucking Peter McGrail, Nick Ball. Bradley. There's so much quality in that gym. So you know he's getting work. You know his sparring sessions, he's not blowing people away. He's getting proper work with world-class, young, hungry fighters like him. And then thirdly, as if I'd ever say he can't go to world level, if he bumped into him in the street, he'd probably beat the shit out of me. I've never been as intimidated by any professional fighter as I am by young Andrew Crane. Kane, what was he like at the Echo Arena, dude? When he was sitting just by us, we were doing comms, and you're looking over and you're looking to say hello and maybe bump fists, and he just sits there snarling at you like a little bulldog. You're like, I'm staying the fuck away from him. I swear to God, he's terrifying. I'm glad I'm married. Are they to be caught in Liverpool with my girlfriend walking through town and Andrew Kane decides he wants to take it home? And you just have to, well, go on, mate, like, you can have it. Terrifying kid, man.
He is, man. But what a fucking talent. There's nothing better than small guys that can knock dudes out. There's nothing better because
it's fast.
Yeah, and listen, all the accolades go from super middle really upwards. That's where all the attention is, because that's where you kind of see the majority of knockouts. When you get a small dude, i.e. Inoue, back in the day Naz, when you get someone like that who is fucking super exciting to watch and knocking dudes out quick as fuck, wow, man. It's just so, so good. So good. Andrew Kane, again, another first-round knockout. Get him out again. It's going to be hard to matchmaking, like I said, but get him out again. Get him doing his thing. Great performance. We kind of tipped the main event would be a tough one. We've watched Bellotto on many, many occasions.
Yeah.
We knew that Brad Foster would be up against it, and it played that way. I thought Bellotto was great, did his thing. Yeah, Brad Foster just couldn't live with him.
Yeah, and again, unfortunately, it's just about levels, isn't it, sometimes? Yeah. And you knew it was going to be a tough ask for Brad. But Bellotto just turned up, and you're kind of hoping, you know, on Bellotto on a bad day, if he's not quite on it, you know, and then he struggled to make weight on the Thursday, and I was like, yes, that's what Brad Foster needs. He needs Bellotto to just be slightly off his game, just to not quite turn up. But unfortunately, on the night he did turn up, and he looked great at times. And
yeah,
you know, I think we were generous with him on the scorecards, but it was Bellotto all day. He looked great.
Yeah. Away from the actual action at the weekend, there's been lots of developments over the last 7 days. You may have seen that Josh Taylor has decided, I haven't spoken to him personally, I haven't seen it come out of his mouth, but we are being told that he wants to stay at £140. Now, there's obviously a situation with the WBA because he's no longer the WBA champion. They themselves are having this fucking crazy round-robin tournament. We'll talk about that in a minute, where you've got to make a PowerPoint presentation to pitch to fight for a world title. We'll come to that in a minute. So Josh Taylor's currently the unified champion still at £140, and we're being told that the rumour is that he's negotiating a fight with Jose Zepeda, who is the WBC number one. Now, not that Josh is getting married this summer. I don't know the timeline on that. I don't know the timeline on fights or anything like that. Obviously, he's earned the right. Josh Taylor, over the last God knows how many years, has earned the right to do what the bloody hell he wants right at this moment in time. If he wants to take some time off to get married and go and enjoy himself, absolutely, you've done it. Became undisputed champion. However, if you're going to stay at £140, which is the rumour that we're hearing right now, the only fight to make is the rematch with Jack Catterall. That's it. Jose Zepeda on paper is brilliant. I love Zepeda. I love the matchup of Zepeda and Taylor. I think it's a great fight. I'm in on it. It's a top fight. But there is a shadow over this division at the moment. And the shadow over the division is that the majority of people that watched Josh Taylor versus Jack Catterall believe that Jack Catterall won that fight, and didn't just win the fight, he won the fight handsomely. Sadly, that night, he didn't get his hand raised and he didn't become the undisputed champion of the world. Now, Jack Cattrall's been stiffed a little bit by some of these sanctioning bodies. He should have been reinstated straight away as the number one with the WBO. He wasn't. He was put down to number three because it doesn't fit their narrative. So now he's going to have to probably have an interim fight in order to earn the opportunity once again to be fighting for a world title. A world title that he should already have. He should have multiple of these world titles. The right thing to do, in my opinion, given the fact that Jack Catterall stepped aside in order for the undisputed fight to take place Correct. Between Ramirez and Taylor.
And that's the key for me. That's the key.
He should now be fighting Josh Taylor for the unified super lightweight championships of the world. That's what should happen next. And I genuinely believe, and I hope we come to some conclusion, because Josh Taylor's a top dude. He's a top lad. He's a great fighter. I enjoy interviewing him. I think he's just brilliant. I don't want this to tarnish everything that he's done so far, man. Because yeah. I genuinely believe it'll turn fans away from him. Fans will turn against if he doesn't fight Jack Catterall. If he stays at 140 and doesn't fight Jack Catterall, fans will turn on him. And I don't want that to happen to him.
Yeah. Because he's had, in the last 5-10 years, he's, and maybe more, he's had the best career of any British boxer, in my opinion. Every fight he's fought was competitive. Current and former world champion since his 12th fight. Absolutely unbelievable. Every fight he went into, you were like, fuck me, why is Josh, why are the, at first it was the McGuigans, and then, you know, you're like, why is Josh having these fights? Why is he getting tested so early? And then when the big fights came, when the world title unification fights came, then all that hard work, all that money in the bank, to use the Teddy Atlas term, was fuck paid off in spades, because he'd been there, done it, wore the t-shirt. He'd come through test after test after test. And the hard way, he became the undisputed champion of the world. Sensational. Now, let's look at it from Josh's point of view. He has a terrible night against Catchell. Mm-hmm. Nothing's working. Mm-hmm. He told us straight afterwards, my wake up was abysmal. I'll never, ever do 140 again. I only stuck around to give Jack something back because he let me go. He allowed you to unify the belt. He never took step aside money. He said, go on, then you go and fight Ramirez as long as you fight me. And Josh said, I was dead at the weight. The only reason I am still at 140, my physical body won't let me do it. The only reason I'm here is to give Jack Catchell what he deserves. Now, on the night, the judges never gave Jack Catchell what he deserved. Now, if for me, if Josh Taylor moves up to 147 and the belts get fragmented, listen, absolutely. I'm still got a problem with the judges, but I've got no problem whatsoever with Josh Taylor. Because Josh Taylor, for me, done what he said he was going to do. He was a man about it, and he said, listen, I'm a man. I will do what I said I was going to do. I shouldn't be 140 no more. I'm dead at this weight. But I, as a man, was honoured my word, and I stuck around for Jack Catterall. I gave him his opportunity. But I told you, regardless of what's happened on the night, I can't do this no more. I'm going to 147. Good luck to everybody. And I'd have gone, I've got no issue with you, Josh, whatsoever. Crack on, son. I'm a big fan. Let's go to welterweight and take on Spence and Crawford and whoever else wants that tartan tornado magic. If he now backtracks on his words, if he now basically highlights the fact that, well, that was a lie. I wasn't dead at the weight. Maybe I did a shit weight cut, but I'm not dead at the weight. My future's at this weight. If everything he said on the night, all those excuses, which is what it's becoming, an excuse to why he lost to Jack Catterall, if all that reigns true and he stays at 140, he will never recover. He will never recover professionally, because it's not just fans of Jack Catterall, or just maybe it's Scottish fans as well. I'm seeing a lot of Scottish fans on Twitter going, nah, man, that doesn't sit right with me. That does not sit right with me. You deserve to give that man his rematch if you are staying in this weight class. And that's a fact. He will struggle to recover from this if he does not get back in a ring with Jack Catterall if he stays at 140. And listen, a lot of American fans are going, wow, Zepeda's a great fight, man. You haven't got a clue what you're talking about. I know it's a great fight. You've just highlighted. It's a great fight. However, Zepeda should be fighting Jack Catterall for the undisputed title. That's what should be happening if Josh wasn't getting his rematch. I'll tell you what, I bet you Catterall would have given Josh Taylor his rematch in Manchester at Manchester Arena. I bet you Jack would have gone, okay, I won. I was the better man. You're saying your weight cut was shit. Come on then, let's go again. Manchester Arena, let's go, Josh. He'd have done that, even though there has been animosity. But what you're finding now is Josh Taylor's rhetoric seems to be, well, that's, you were talking shit about me after the fight, so fuck you now. I'm not giving you your rematch. I'm going to go and fight Zepeda instead. You can't pick and choose like that, man. You professionally, you won't recover because, and I never, ever thought I would say this about Josh Taylor because he isn't this. In fact, he's the exact opposite. Josh Taylor's the guy that walks into the fire. Josh Taylor, his entire career is the one who's gone, get me the fucking sternest test possible. Get me the adversity. Get me the world champions. Get me the unification fights. I don't give a fuck. I am the underdog. Get me in there. And now, he's acting a bit yellow. He's acting a bit like a coward to go, oh, I don't want to go with him again. Where's Zepeda? And I don't give a fuck how good Zepeda is. That's not Josh Taylor. His whole career was built on being the fucking bravest guy out there in British boxing. But not taking on Jack Cattrall, his entire rhetoric changes. The entire narrative around him changes. Oh, yeah, you're the guy with the big balls that unified the belts. You got beat that night when you rematch him.
Financially as well, it doesn't make sense to me because it's the biggest fight. Yep. With all due respect to Zepeda, Progre, Teofimo Lopez coming up, all these things. The biggest fight is Jack Cattrall. That's the biggest fight. Now, maybe I don't know, mate. Maybe Josh does want to do it, but maybe his promoter's telling him to do something else. Obviously, he's a top-ranked fighter, isn't he? Zepeda's a top-ranked fighter. Teofimo Lopez is a top-ranked fighter. You see where I'm going with this? Maybe there's that element to it. Why don't Top Rank just sign fucking Jack Cattrall? Just sign him. And if you want to try and keep the 140 championships in-house, do that. But that fight has to happen, mate, because it doesn't look good for your client. If you're advising him wrong, if you're advising him incorrectly...
I don't think he'll ever recover. His entire legacy, which prior to the Cattrall, and even the Cattrall fight, man, I'm not blaming him.
No,
for them scorecards. No. It's got fuck all to do with Josh Taylor. His response afterwards, in the immediate aftermath, I thought was ill-advised. However, I get it, his adrenaline's running. Mate, I thought I won the fight. Sound man, I expect you to say that. But in the aftermath, the way it's gone nasty between the two of them, I'm like, this feels fake now. It feels like you're trying to put a barrier up so you don't have to fight Jack Cattrall again. And that's not who Josh Taylor is. Josh Taylor's fucking Braveheart, man. He's the guy. And now he's running with his tail between his legs because the real fight's over here. I don't give a fuck about Zepeda. I don't care about what else is out there. I don't care about the belts. If they say, listen, because he's not ranked with the WBA or WBO now, it's up to the ranking system. I'm just trying to... No, no.
He's still Ring Magazine champ. He'll still be Ring Magazine champ.
You give up one of your belts. Yeah. Fuck all the belts off, Josh. Just have that Ring Magazine belt on your shoulder and I guarantee the guys at Ring Magazine will go, yeah, Jack Cattrall too. Absolutely the Ring Magazine belt's on the line. Abso-fucking-lutely. Because even they could see, well, everyone could see, that Josh Taylor lost the first fight. Again, not Josh's fault. Josh, put the record straight, son. Go back. If you're staying at 140, you've got to put the record straight. You've got to get back in with Jack Cattrall, and then we are 100% back on fucking board, man.
I agree. I've got an apology to make here, actually. And that apology's to Devin Haney, all right?
My boy.
Yes, your boy. Because for those that have only just started following Fight Disciples, every year, at the start of the year, we pick fighters that we are classing as the ones to watch. I think my first ever one was indeed Jack Cattrall, if you remember. What are you doing? Oh, you're taking your top off. I wonder what you were doing. I wonder what you were getting undressed. Right. And then one particular year, we had Teofimo Lopez as mine, and you had Devin Haney as Nick's. Obviously, everybody knows what Teofimo Lopez has gone on to done. And Devin Haney has maybe come under a little bit of critique on this podcast, mainly from me, email champ, various things like that, calling out Lomachenko, for example, when he had fights, but with other people, all those types of things of which I've been hypercritical of. And I stand by him at the time, but I'll tell you something. This year alone, he is going right up in my estimations, this kid. The way that he is acting. Yeah. Since this debacle, obviously, with the Kambosos fight, and it's played out the way that it's played, obviously, with Lomachenko not being able to compete against Kambosos. Him, obviously, taking less money, going through all the rigmarole of having to sign for a promoter that he probably didn't really want to sign. I think... Devin Haney enjoyed being a free agent and liaising between promoters, but he's had to sign a top-ranked deal. Okay, that's something that he's ended up doing in order to secure this fight. He's going to halfway across the world in Australia, and I'm sure you've seen over the last couple of days, his dad hasn't been able to get a visa as of yet. Hopefully that gets changed, but as of yet, his dad hasn't been able to get a visa because of a felony that he had in 1992. So he's not been granted access into Australia, a man that has sculpted this lad's career up to this point. His chief second in Ben Davison isn't able to go to Australia to help out. So therefore, Zab Judah's dad has had to step in order to corner Devin Haney. But Devin Haney hasn't fucking batted an eyelid. He hasn't flinched. Put me on the plane, man. I'm going to Australia to become the undisputed champion of the world. Now, even if that does not materialise, that attitude, Devin Haney, has made me a fan of yours for life, son. That is exactly what I want to see. I get the barriers that have come up that you could quite easily have said no to. And do you know something? There's a lot of fighters in the world, mate, that would have said no with some of these barriers that have come your way. You've not done that. And especially at your age, that is to be commended. Fair fucking play, sunshine. I'm locked in on this fight in 2 weeks' time. And do you know something? Even though I love George Kambosos, I'm secretly rooting for Devin Haney now. Because I love that fucking warrior attitude. Love it.
My guy. Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable. He just won't let anything break him, will he? And as you say, he's had three or four opportunities now to pull out of this fight to go, nah, man, I'm just giving up too much. But he believes in himself wholeheartedly. He believes that he can go on and beat George Kambosos, become undisputed champion, and be the guy, be the main player in this lightweight division. And then he's the kingmaker then, you know. I think he's got a fucking rematch clause, hasn't he, with Kambosos Jr. I think that's part of it. He's got to beat him twice, if I'm not mistaken. But still.
Yeah, but he agreed to that. I think it's Kambosos that asked for that.
He's had to agree to it. He's had to, that's what I mean. He's got to beat him twice to beat him, which is ridiculous. Yeah. But anyway, he goes down there. He'll have very few fans down there as well because I think the travelling into Australia is still not... I think it's a little bit easier now, but I don't know how easy it actually is, but it's a fucking hell of a flight anyway. But yeah, all credit in the world too, man. I can't wait for that fight in 2 weeks' time. And as you say, there's nothing not to love about George Kambosos either.
Love him.
So now you've got... It's nice when in fights when you've got a clear heel and a clear hero. But now, as you say, Devin's proven himself to be a bit of a hero as well, so... All respect in the world too, man. Can't wait for it.
Absolutely. That's a couple of weeks off. It's going to be a cracking, cracking fight, cracking atmosphere as well. If you are one of our Australian listeners, you've got a ticket for that. You're in for a little bit of a treat. I think it's going to be a belter. One thing that won't be a belter is Jaime Munguia's next fight. What is this dude doing, man? We've been high on Jaime Munguia for time. He becomes the champ. You know, he came up against one of our guys in Liam Beefy Smith, and we thought, do you know something? Yeah, he whacks our monkey here. He is a bit vulnerable, but he's exciting. I kind of like that excitement about him. And the plan was to obviously step up to 160 and start motoring through the 160 division. Never materialised the fight with Demetrius Andrade when it most certainly should have happened. Various other fights just haven't happened for him at 160. This dude now, right, he's through 39 fights undefeated, and people are saying, well, he's just bedding into 160 pounds. Get to France. He was world champion at 154. He should have now motored on. Why on God's green earth is he fighting Jimmy Kelly? No disrespect to Jimmy Kelly. Jimmy Kelly's a top dude. Met him on several occasions, interviewed him for various fights. He's a nice kid. What is Jaime Munguia doing fighting him next when you've got the likes of Charlo, you've got the likes of Golovkin, all these names. Why is Munguia not fighting these dudes? It's madness.
The mad thing is, you've got Munguia matched up with Kelly. And on Saturday night, we saw poor old Danny Dignam go in there with fucking...
Zanabek
for the interim middleweight title. And you're like, surely Zanabek is a better opponent. Surely they're the guys. That's the level he should be at. Why are we seeing shitty fights like this put together? Well, that was a terrible mismatch. I know Danny Dignam come on at late.
You did see Gianni Beck. You did see Gianni Beck, didn't you? Maybe that's why that fight's not happened.
Well, yeah. But again, he's world class. If you're world class, you're world class. He absolutely battered Dignam, by the way. Fucking hell. I felt sorry for Danny. But we said
but that was on last week's show, didn't we?
It was always going to happen. And that's exactly why Eubank fucking ran a million miles away from that fight. Because that kid is legit. Incidentally, on that card, did you see Jamel Herring retired?
Yeah, we kind of knew that this was coming, didn't we? I mean, since getting beat from Shakur, Shakur was magnificent that night, and it was one of those where it felt like a change into the guard. And I know that he's flirted a little bit, Jamel, with what weight, you know what I mean? I'm going to change my weight and all this type of stuff. It just wasn't there. That's not to take away from a phenomenal career. I mean, this is a dude that turned to boxing, professional boxing, late after a phenomenal career in the military, didn't he? And he just captured everybody's heart. Anybody that's ever spoken to Jamel Herring knows that he is a fucking stellar dude, mate. What a guy. Yeah. And an achievement to become world champion after all the things that he's experienced in his life. Sensational.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I couldn't speak any more highly of Jamel Herring. We've been lucky enough to be around him. In just fights, nice in his own nice fights man. And outside of his own fights as well. You know, he used to love rocking up to Vegas during fight week. One of the only world champions he was at the time as well. One of the only world champions I've ever met, ever interviewed, that literally bounces around Vegas during fight week.
On his own.
On his jack. Yeah. No entourage, no partner, nobody. Literally just Jamel Herring, world champion, walking around, just soaking up the atmosphere, the big fights, jumping in and out of interviews with people. Sensational, man. What a fucking guy. And I hope he enjoys retirement because, let's be honest, he over-delivered as a pro.
Yeah. I've kind of just skirted over Benavidez as well and Lemieux. Did you catch any of that? Because, you know, for 9 minutes, Lemieux was relatively competitive and then he wasn't after getting clipped by one of the fastest left hooks that you've ever seen in your entire life. Jeez. That would have knocked out a fucking... I'll go as far as knocked out a bus. Can't knock out a bus. I was going to go elephant, mate. I was going to go actual a living being.
It would surprised have knocked, you didn't go dog.
That would have knocked out a dog nonce. Mate, you're belting sharp.
Yeah.
I really hope. I know that obviously Benavidez is, let's just say he's had a coloured out of ring life, hasn't he? I just hope that. We're obviously going to get Canelo Triple G, aren't we? It would be brilliant to see Canelo Benavidez, man. That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? That'd be a brilliant fight.
Yeah, that's the fight to make in the super middleweight division, 100%. Massive fight for Mexico. Do it on a Mexican bank holiday. Benavidez versus Canelo is fucking huge, man. And for me, it's the fight that's got to happen. You know, I know Canelo, clean shop at 12 stone, beat some great world champions, unified all the belts. Been there, done it, ticked every box, but... You know, bringing Golovkin up to 168 for the first time in his career just for the September, I guess, undisputed title defense doesn't really wash with me because Golovkin's not a super middleweight. If you're going to do it, mate, do it against this fucking guy. Do it against Benavidez, who's young, who's hungry, who's unorthodox, who's big, and who can motherfucking punch. And don't get me wrong, again, Canelo is a massive step up from David Lemieux. But David Lemieux got battered. He was in the fight, but he got fucking dropped in the second round and finished in the third round. So he wasn't really in the fight. He was competitive until he wasn't.
Plus,
I suppose, batter them. Look great.
Listen, from a marketing point of view, obviously it's 26 fights now, 23 knockouts. He's been the champion. And we know that he obviously lost those belts because of extracurricular activities, let's say. So there's kind of a shadow over the division anyway. You know, would Canelo have been undisputed champion if he'd have had to have gone through Benavidez? If Benavidez wouldn't have got himself into trouble outside the ring, would he have reneged that WBC Correct. Championship? That's the question, isn't it? So therefore, that's the question to answer for Canelo. I mean, it is sellable.
He's got to beat him. That should be the big conversation. Benavidez is kind of still the lineal champion. No one's beating him.
I like that you've still gone lineal. Champ. You've gone big. Fuck you've
that.
Gone big on it.
Fuck that. Can't believe I just said that myself. But Canelo, truly, the Benavidez camp should be screaming, going, listen, man, you may have them belts, but only because ours got taken off us. You got to fucking beat us to prove you're the best at 168.
Yeah.
And performances like that against David Lemieux, that draws a little bit of a line in the sand. And hopefully the Mexican media especially, that should be the fight they're gunning for. I know we're going to get Golovkin next, but I think Canelo in the new year should certainly be looking at Benavidez for May. That'd be a massive, massive fight in May.
Yeah, I agree. What's your PowerPoint presentation like?
Not too bad. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I wonder what O'Hara Davis's is like, or maybe a Regis Progre. I know that we've been speaking about the 140-pound division. WBA Championship is vacant. And I thought we had ranking systems for a reason, even though some of these ranking systems are just ridiculous because... Right. People just chuck in names for fun as and when a promoter wants that particular person to be fighting their fighter. But we're told that the WBA have asked the top six ranked super lightweights in the world to make a pitch. It's like Dragon's Den, innit? That's what it is. It's like The Apprentice. You're hired. You're fired. Make a pitch as to why you believe that you should be fighting for the WBA Championship of the World. What the fuck are you talking about, man? What the fuck is this shit? Yeah? If that belt's vacant, number one, number two fight. That's what happens, innit? That's what's been going on for years. How can number six go, well, actually, what the fuck? Shut up, man. But it happened. I don't know what the conclusions of this PowerPoint presentation or... What did they do? Did they do it over Zoom? Did they do it over Teams? How did they lay it out? I want to see how they laid out the presentation of I should be fighting for a world championship.
Yeah. Literally, the WBA... No wonder the Boxer News started refusing to recognise them because it's just utter nonsense, isn't it? It is utter nonsense. Like, you wonder... It's terrifying to think that these people have so much control over this sport when they clearly haven't got a fucking clue what they're doing. Absolutely horrific. Don't forget, this is the same WBA that at one point last year had 41 champions across the 19 weight divisions.
17.
Was it 17? Fucking hell. 17 weight divisions, 40-odd champions.
Yeah.
Horrific. Horrific. And then public outcry, they started to bring some of them belts back in. But this is just another example of why organisations like the WBA need to just be told, no longer required, man. Your services to this sport are no longer required. We are not going to continue to furnish your lavish lifestyle with three percenters and cash deposits for your belts just to legitimise our fight cards. We must start pushing back on organisations like the WBA. Just go, right, you're not in the sport no more. Fuck off.
Simplest. Nah, fuck off. Done.
If only it was that simple. The problem is, obviously, certain promoters, like this weekend, you've got Mayweather Promotions, who are thick as thieves with the WBA. And what do we see? Javonta Davis fighting Rolly Romero. Great fight for the WBA regular world lightweight title.
Yes.
Regular. It's not a real belt. The real belt's owned by George Kambosos Jr. This is a secondary bullshit belt.
Yeah.
And then on the undercard, you've got, again, the secondary middleweight belt. Mm. Israel Andalara taking on Spike O'Sullivan. Jesus.
Mm.
This is what the WBA do, man. If you paid them enough money, they'll give you a nice, big, shiny belt, and you can call it a double world title fight, when in reality, it's anything but.
Well, just the marketing of Javonta Davis is ridiculous, because if you actually look at Javonta... Listen, the fight this weekend is a fight that I'm actually
great
excited.
Fight.
I'm excited
great fight.
About the fight. Yeah, I'm excited about the fight. But like you say, when you put a trinket on it like this, you're kind of selling these false narratives to fight fans, casual fight fans. The hardcore fight fans that listen to us, they know full well what the crack is this weekend. But Javonta Davis will be billed as a multi-weight world champion, three-weight world champion, five-time, all this type. Nah, man, that is a bullshit narrative. He is the world champion at super featherweight. I think he's done it three times. And half of it's his own fault because he missed weight and therefore lost his belts and had to go get them back. He's won the IBF, I think, once, twice maybe, and he's done the WBA super. So that's a legit one. If you're going to cast the WBA, the super belt is the legit one, and he's done that, okay? But he's not a lightweight champion, as you've just pointed out. And he's not a super lightweight champion when he went up there and Mario Barrios that he fought up there and he ended up getting a regular version of a belt up there. Nah, man, this is absolute bullshit. The fight doesn't need a belt, need it, because the fight sells itself. These two dudes hate each other. There's a bit of narrative, a bit of needle about them. And it's a good knock. Two undefeated lads, two young bucks, two lads that can crack. I mean, Romero, what is he, 14 fights through, 12? He can hit a bit. We saw him in the gym when we went over to go and see Teofimo Lopez, didn't we? And you know what I mean? The dude's legit. Don't get me wrong. Javonta Davis is a little bit more legit. That's where I'm at with it. But it's a great fight. It doesn't need bullshit. And that fucking Lara, Spike O'Sullivan, WBA world title, which is the regular world title. Come on, man. What are we playing at? The WBA champion is Triple G. He's just beaten Murata for that belt. That's the champ. Why do we need this bullshit here?
Exactly. And George Kambosos is the WBA champion in the lightweight division. You've got two established active world champions. They are the world champions. These are not world title fights. It's embarrassing. I'd be embarrassed when their belts get given out at the end of this fight. Where is it? In New York? Barclays Center?
Yeah, it's Barclays Center in Brooklyn, yeah.
And still, WBA world champ. No, you're not. You're not the world champion. The fucking world champion's over there, you soft twat. But listen, regardless, that's enough talking about belts. I'm sick of talking about belts now. Fuck them. As fights, Ezra Andalara, mate, I know he's about 57 years of age now, but he boxes the socks off Spike O'Sullivan every day and twice on Sundays. Jonathan Davis versus Rolly Romero is the fight, because Rolly Romero has got so much talent. As Adam said, we see him going through his training regime with Teofimo when they were based together at the same gym in Las Vegas. Kid's got so much confidence, man. And you've seen that all this fight week as well. He's talking the talk. He's saying he's going to knock Javonta out. He's saying he's going to do
round.
This, going to do that.
He's going to do it in one round, man.
Mate, I fucking love that confidence, man. I love it. And he's going to bring it. And that's going to be a super entertaining fight to watch this week. I'm hoping there's going to be some kind of 24-7. It's on Showtime, isn't it? So
yeah.
I'm hoping it's got some kind of 24-7 build-up, because that will probably be as entertaining as the fight itself. No doubt fucking Floyd will be in there and all that, you know. And Javonta Davis, man, whether you like him, love him, scared of him, whatever, the kid's a fucking assassin. The kid is a little animal, man. A fucking a superstar, let's be honest. Javonta Davis is a superstar. He hasn't won the proper belts. He hasn't been potentially guided the right way or been in... Well, he's been in massive fights. Fucking don't get me wrong. He's been in great fights and had great performances. Regardless of what the fuck he's done with the belts, Javonta's a superstar.
Hmm. 27 now, me, man. He's 27.
Yeah, I know. I think for me personally, I just think Javonta's just a little bit too experienced and a little bit too gritty for Rolly Romero. Rolly's a superstar, man. You know, he's going to have a great career. But I just think he's just a little bit soft. A little bit soft for someone like Javonta, who's...
You mean, you know, a little bit green? A little bit green.
Yeah, just a bit too green, yeah. I just think... Once you start letting your hands go against Javonta, man, poof, you fucking better not miss... Because once he lets his hands go, you know about it. You know, what is he, 23, 24 knockouts in 26 fights?
Yeah.
Beating proper world champions as well. I think Javonta's gonna get this one, gonna get the knockout. But mate, I'm all in on Rolly Romero and his attitude. If he comes out gunslinging, mate, this could be fucking sensational.
I haven't seen a British broadcaster connected to it, but I'll try and get one and get it up on our social media for you.
See what, you're going to negotiate? You're going to ring Leonard, are you, and try and
just give
him
a ring
for someone?
Give him a ring, yeah. No, what I was going to say is try and find out where it is and stick the link on so people know exactly where to watch it, because it will be a cracking fight. You just mentioned Floyd there. Did you see him out in Abu Dhabi? Did you see him doing his thing, chatting to the commentators as he's having a little bit of a knock?
I seen him... I didn't see the actual exhibition thing. No, I seen him having a conversation, obviously, with Amir, because obviously it all got pushed back, didn't it, in the... Remember, the royal family passed away last week, so the fight...
Well, that was in Dubai, yeah, so they moved it. They ended up moving it to Abu Dhabi.
Right, okay.
So it went out to Abu Dhabi. Floyd, as the commentators were making comments on Floyd, saying, oh, Floyd's great at mental warfare. Mid-fight, he just turns and says, yep, I am great at mental warfare, and then carried on doing what he was doing. Mate, easy dough. Easy dough for the lad. Anderson Silva were on there doing a bit as well. He looked good.
That's right. I've seen Anderson Silva knockout. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's caught the attention of Jake Paul now. There you go. Anderson Silva had sought Jake Paul out, man. Make the fight, Jake. Make the fight. As if we've gone here now talking about this level. This
you
is where
have.
We've got
you
to.
You went here, not me.
All right, mate. All right, fair enough. Sound as. Yeah, that were the weekend. So Floyd will be jetting back, no doubt, to stateside to obviously keep an eye on his charge. Javonta Davis taking on Rolly Romero this weekend. We won't mention the belt. It's just a great fight. Made it lightweight. Yeah. Personally, I would like Javonta to go back down. I'd like him to go to 130. Imagine making fights down there with the likes of Shakur Stevenson.
Oh, fuck me. That's a fight.
Or even Lomma. Get Lomma back down there as well, because he's a big dude for lightweight. There you go. That's your fight sports boxing this weekend. Big week this week, isn't it, for the Mighty Reds?
Paris, here we go. Number 7. Boom. Yeah. Let's go.
And it's also a big week for Fight Disciples, because our producer, our long-term producer, little Mikey, he's finally getting wed. You know the guy that he pierced his ear. Yep, it's happening this weekend, ladies and gentlemen. We will be there, so be across our social media. We'll be suited, booted, ready to rock and roll, celebrating with the big dog himself as he finally ties the knot to his long-term love. It's going to be an absolute belter of a day. Full Fight Disciples celebration, and we'll tell you all about
Hell
it
yeah.
on
I'm
next
gonna
week's
go,
show.
I'm going to go full party mode, so stay all over that social media Sunday.
Cock and balls out on the dance floor. That's what's happening, isn't it? There you go. Keep an eye out for it. Thank you very much for listening. Been an absolute pleasure being in your company. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.